Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Ellie Blum, a SaaS onboarding optimization consultant, and optimizing SaaS trials is exactly what we're going to be talking about today. This episode is brought to you by the UI Audit. Want to design web applications that are actually useful to people? This book will help you adopt a smarter approach to UI UX, from product strategy to each individual screen. To get your copy, head over to uibreakfast.com/audit and use your special promo code SUMMERTIME20 to get 20% off any book package. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
We are thrilled to have you as a guest, and we can't wait to pick your brain on the topic.
I'm excited.
So you do optimization of trials for a living. What does it mean? How does it look like? How do you work with your clients?
So onboarding is the part of the conversation that SaaS companies have with their customers right at the beginning of their relationship. It's usually happening during a trial or during some kind of risk-free period. And one of the biggest challenges is that this is an area that is not terribly, well represented in an organizational hierarchy chart. So there's very infrequently an onboarding department, I have found. So that makes it a little bit hard for teams to implement a strategy to and have someone take ownership of that strategy to help their customers get started. So my role is as much to help people facilitate the process of getting their customers started, and the deliverable, the output that I produce for customers is conversion-optimized onboarding emails. And at the same time, to present all the research that goes into forming those onboarding emails to help get buy-in from all the different team members, and ideally to help someone within the organization take ownership of onboarding as an interdisciplinary activity.
Awesome. Do you have any special formats for working with clients? Do you go in yourself and do research, right? Or do you just do, you know, strategic planning with your clients?
So the first step that I have with new clients is a road mapping session where we look at a few different factors, starting with the data. So we want to know what people are doing. We're going to look at user behavior data, figure out what separates the folks who are successful from the folks who are not successful. Then we're going to look at what kinds of feedback we're getting from customers. So what are they saying when they ask for help in their customer support chats? Are they saying, please help, I can't figure out how to do something and it's an easy switch? Or are they saying, please help, you've lost my data? Do we have to assess whether the reason? Yeah. A lot of times we have to assess whether the reason for low free-to-paid conversion rates is because of faulty onboarding or because there's some major product flaw, and how do you address that while you're also talking about the marketing of selling the software during the trial and helping folks get started. And I also go out in the wild and listen to what people are saying about the product or the problem that they solve related, the problem that the product solves for folks. So I'll look at what people say on forums, on review sites, how they talk about the problem that they want solved. And then I also do a round of jobs to be done style interviews. So we're talking with folks who have recently become customers about the job. I know you've talked about jobs to be done with many of your prior guests. So talking about the job someone hires the software to do. So the road mapping session is about getting as much of that data into one place. I use a tool called NomNom. It's a great way to integrate, pull in integrations with Drift and Zendesk and Intercom, and look at all of the support data that you're getting, put in interview transcripts, and start to develop some leading indicators about why people might be staying and why people might be leaving. And then by sharing that research, we can start to say, okay, what's our plan for the next 3, 6, 12 months? How are we going to onboard our customers? What's the low-hanging fruit? What are the essential things we need to fix immediately? And then what are we working toward? What's the ultimate goal? At MicroConf, I showed a contrast between during my talk at MicroConf, I showed a contrast between those behaviorally triggered email sequences that we send folks. That's kind of what we're driving towards when we're talking about sending conversion optimized onboarding sequences. But actually getting there can be a little bit overwhelming for folks. So how do we work up to that level in some smaller steps, some smaller increments? How do we make sure we have the buy-in from folks? Through anyone who's going to be working on onboarding, how do we make sure that everyone's on the same page and knows what to do to move forward? So some of what comes out of that is saying, okay, here's how I can help you over the next few months. Here's how the additional research we need to do. Here are the onboarding email sequences we need to write. But that's my deliverable and that's my output. There's a lot of things that happen within the team that may also be part of it. So how do we say, okay, these are some design or UX or product related questions that emerged from the customer research that we did. How much of this do we need to take into consideration now? How much of this takes precedence over any other activity?
Fantastic. Thank you for giving us that global overview of virtually everything you do.
Yes.
That's really a lot of things involved even in the first step, which is, you know, called so simply research. And by just listening to you, you can never tell it's really simple.
Yeah.
So how, with your medium, how creative do you really get? Is it mostly the shape of emails that it translates to, or do you get some specific deliverables? Do you get clients develop specific knowledge base things, videos? I don't know. You can get really wild there.
You can get really wild there. There is a lot that can go into onboarding. And I think this is actually a really great point, that onboarding is about helping people get started. And it's about helping them with whatever problem they come to you with in that moment. So a lot of times we assume folks are coming to our software because they can't wait to try out all of our features. And this is something that approximately 100% of my clients will say is, hey, I have a lot of really great features. I built everything in here because people asked for it. People love it, love the features. If I could just get more people to use these features during the trial, then maybe I would get more upgrades. And the challenge with this approach is that no one is here because they love trying features. No one is here because they love trying new software. Maybe a couple of really software aficionado types, maybe. But people are here because they have a problem to solve. Now, the problem might be that they have another tool that's not working and they want to see if yours can fix it. It might be that their boss has asked them to look into something and see if it's going to be compatible with their team. It might be that they are looking into a software and they need to convince their boss that this is something that they should try. I worked with one company, and one of the things that one of the ways that this product gets sold is that the people who actually use it will sign up for a trial, but they're actually going out and doing the work, but they have a manager who's not doing the work and who would not really ever use the product. He's the person or she's the person responsible for buying the software. So part of that onboarding saying, okay, how do you help the folks who are using the tool get the buy-in that they need from their boss or their superior or their credit card holder so that they can continue using it? So that's why the research is so important, because we want to know what job people are hiring the trial to do as much as what job they're hiring the software to do. Because people don't just come to a trial because they're here because there's something, some question that they have. So we may develop supporting documentation that includes an email that you can send your colleagues, an email you can send your boss. It may include some additional support documentation. It may include we may have some cool ideas for how we can help folks with tutorials and with different videos. It kind of really depends on where the breakdowns are happening and what kind of help people need.
I know you come from a conversion copywriting background, and I think that's an amazing background to have for what you do right now. And if I were to say, you know, one principle from there is to keep things very simple and focused on a single objective per email, per sales page, per, I don't know, is that true for onboarding sequences? Do we focus on a single goal, or do you have a plethora of goals to follow?
So there are a plethora of goals that you might need to meet during the onboarding phase. But for each email, almost always, and I will give a slight caveat here, almost always, yes, what we call the rule of one applies. And that states that anytime you're sending someone a piece of copy, you want to write it for one reader and you want to offer them one path forward. So what that means is that we don't want to send the same emails to everyone. So if you have a product that goes out to solopreneurs or a product that is useful for solopreneurs and is useful for teams, you're not necessarily going to be giving them the same kind of onboarding experience. And then, so you've already got two sets of goals. And then within each group, you're going to want to make sure that everyone can, you give them an action to complete. So with your onboarding email, you want them to do one thing, and that's either to go back into that product and do something, to invite a team member, to send an email to a team member later on in the trial to upgrade and to purchase. If you send an email that has all of these things at once, a lot of folks do this, I get a lot of emails, welcome emails that will say, here are 15 things you need to do and here's the link to buy. It's right. Very overwhelming. And I strongly encourage companies to never, I like to say never put more than one call to action, with the caveat that you might have two different versions of a call to action, or two different versions of the action someone can complete. If you're showing someone how to, or sending them an email about the feature that they need to use to get started, and maybe it's got a level of complexity that someone may be able to get it at first glance, and some other folks may want to go learn a little bit more, you can offer them two different versions of, hey, go implement this feature now, or go learn more about your questions about this feature.
So it's clearly the other goal is clearly secondary, and it should support the first one.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is your writing style there? Do you prefer to provide as much learning information inside the email itself, or do you prefer to send people somewhere to read, to implement, and do something?
I prefer to put as much in the email as possible, mm-hmm. as the starting point. There, the more that you learn, the more that you may be able to say, oh, okay, we're finding that more people are clicking through and going and reading support articles, then you can make that adjustment. But what I like about, there's a few reasons why I like putting all the information in the email. And the first reason is that it gives you an opportunity to really restrict the variables in your onboarding experimentation. There are so many different things that go into whether or not someone decides to upgrade or not. It can get really out of hand really fast. So this keeping everything in the email gives you a pretty clear start to finish experiment, so to speak. And the other reason is that I don't like to send people through multiple steps to try to figure out how to do something. I don't like being on the receiving end of those emails. The more that you can just send people the information that they want in one fell swoop, then the better that, the more helpful that it is for them. So all of that said, the email is still just one part of the conversation. And when you send people back into the product, then you're going to want to continue that messaging so that people can still figure out how to do what they do in product. Trying to think of a good example, but what I use frequently is Camtasia, which is a video editing software. Mm-hmm. And it's not a very easy to use software if you've never used video editing software before, but the complexity does not make it a bad product. It makes it a really good product. So a lot of folks will often confuse the ease of getting started with the relative a lot of folks want people's experiences to be just very easy and straightforward, and they try to make it as uncomplicated as possible without actually solving a problem. So when whatever it is that you choose to do, whether it's to put all the information in an email or to send them to a blog article or to, I guess those are the two options in this scenario, you're going to want to make sure that it's actually helping them solve whatever problem that they want and that they can continue to get the information as they move forward.
What are the most common mistakes that you see people doing? So you mentioned multiple calls to action as being one of them. And mm-hmm. I've seen quite a few others in your MicroConf slides. If you don't mind, I will share those with sure. the audience. But I would love to hear those here. What people are doing wrong most popularly?
Yes. Okay. So there's a few different approaches that I kind of just have to laugh about. And one of them is I think I called it the vacation photos approach. So in the olden days before Facebook, you would have people over your house and you would show them a slide projector of all of your photos of the vacation that you took and kind of hold them hostage until they can go, they can't eat the deviled eggs until they've watched all of the slides from your vacation. And this to me is what I compare software companies when they just say, hey, here's an ultimate guide. You just have to read this 35-page document, watch this 22-minute video, and then you'll be good to go. And it drives me crazy because I asked this question at MicroConf, how many people actually have watched the long video, read the ultimate guide, and zero hands go up. So we know that this is something that we don't want to do when we sign up for products. And yet many products do this. Another very common approach is I had a fun name for it, but it's when you send someone a request to say, hey, how can I help, without actually giving them any help, where you force someone to do the hard work of figuring out what they need from you. And it's a little bit... it's kind of like when you're working with folks who are new to the workforce. A lot of young interns or young employees it's a very common tendency for some kids to not quite know what kind of help they need to offer, how to navigate, how they help people. So they're just walk around saying, hey, how can I help? Whereas other folks may come in and say, hey, I noticed our social media accounts are a little bit inactive. I would love to come up with a plan or schedule time on your calendar to talk about how we can improve this. And that's the kind of approach that I would rather see companies make, of saying, hey, we have observed how people use our product. We know, we've already anticipated the kind of help that we need, that they might need, and we're going to give it to them, as opposed to putting the onus on them to just figure it out on their own. So those are very two common approaches, and the third most common approach is the other one we're speaking about, where you send 15 calls to action, and it's here's 35 things you need to do, and when you're done, you can upgrade and pay. And it's kind of too much too soon. You're giving people more information than they can necessarily handle.
Thank you for sharing these. The topic of our conversation is actually not just putting together the trial sequence, but also optimizing it. And mm-hmm. by optimization, we mean that we are going to be tracking something and improving those parameters. So what exactly that means? How do you do that for your clients?
So there are this ultimately comes down typically to the kinds of tools that a company has in place to keep track of this. So we're looking at a few different metrics for how people are interacting with emails and what people are doing. So we want to see that people who open emails are doing the thing that we've asked them to do. So we want to get people to open our emails, but that's not the main metric that we're concerned with. So you can keep optimizing, or you can keep testing a subject line, and your email testing, your email marketing software will tell you which one gets more opens. This is important because if no one opens the email, then they don't get all the great information you put in there. So that's the first thing that you're going to need to look at. It's also the very, very easiest thing I think you can test in all of A/B testing, because it's so easy to set up. The next thing that we're going to look at is, okay, what are people clicking on? What are they looking at when we are, or how are they responding to the messages that we're sending? So if we find that we send an email that gets very high open rates but very low click-throughs, that gives us a signal to say, oh, okay, so people, there's something about this email that made people want to read it, but we somehow did not give them the information that they needed. So that's part of the reason why we start onboarding with the road mapping session, is to say, okay, we know exactly what hypotheses we're testing with our email sequence. So if you send someone an email and they don't do the thing that you've asked them to do, you know, based on the hypothesis of why you sent that email, what it is that you can start to experiment with next. And this is also something that you can still see in your email marketing software. So from there, once you're starting to look at how people are interacting with the emails, you also want to look at, actually, this is my favorite part. I forgot this. Okay, so one of the things that I love to do with when you have a product that has a large number of signups. So I know a lot of your listeners are founders and they may be getting sub 100 signups. They may still be very early on. And this can be a little bit tricky to get meaningful data at that level. But when you start to have thousands and tens of thousands of folks signing up for a trial every month, you can get a lot of data really quickly. And one of the emails that I like to send to start that optimization process is to say, okay, you signed in, you wanted to, or you signed up for this product. There was some problem you had that you wanted to solve, but you left and you didn't do the thing that you wanted to do. Why? Tell us why, and we're going to send you a little bit of information on how we can help you with that. And you can give folks, it's kind of like a self-segmenter email where depending on how people click on the email, you can give them a tag that says they were struggling with, they just didn't have enough time. This is usually an excuse for something else, but maybe they tell you they didn't have enough time to do it. You may find that people say, I'm not really sure that this is the right, that I really want to be using this tool right now, or that they may say something like, I'm not actually ready for this. I want to use a tool like this one day. I'm not ready for it now. And then one that says something else, you can send that. Once people click the something else link, you can collect their open-ended responses saying, hey, why did you leave? Why did you stop? What's going on in your world that made you sign up? And why didn't this pan out for you? And this can help you start to get the data that you need on how people, the internal work that people have to do to come back to your product and keep using it. Because a lot of people, even we all do this, we have a problem we want to solve. But when the going gets tough, a lot of us give up. So we want to help people overcome that internal work, overcome their motivational struggles. Maybe they signed up at midnight and they really, when they say they didn't have enough time, it was because they were doing some late night reading and they decided to sign up for this trial. They read about it in a blog article. And then by the time they start using the trial, it's 12:30 and they're ready for bed and they just don't feel like it anymore. So how do we help those folks remember why they signed up for the trial in the first place, and how do we help get them the information that they need to keep going? Marie Poulin gave a great talk at MicroConf on how she has a SaaS product, and through talking to folks, they actually started to realize that her SaaS product is for course creators, and they started to realize that people weren't quite ready to build their course. They needed to overcome some struggles relating to building the course. So Maria and her partner Ben developed a course to help people understand what kind of value they could bring to the world and how they could launch their first learning initiative. And so when we're talking about optimizing, I know we all want to go to what does the data say? Are people doing what they say they're going to do? But one of the most important things for us to understand is why are people here, and do we really understand what the problems are that people have, and what do we need to do to help them solve those problems?
Is the ultimate conversion of the person that is signing up for the paid plan after their free trial, is that the ultimate goal? And how do you relate that goal and track that to individual emails and their success?
So it is the goal, but...
yeah, so I'm looking forward to it.
You may get someone who signs up and who is successful and who is still not a good fit. And so once we're even getting someone to upgrade to a paid plan is great, but even that is still kind of a leading indicator in SaaS because it's software as a service. It's a subscription model. So we want to say, okay, this is, we're starting to see some progress that we're getting people to move forward to say, So I've got a little word salad there. So we're starting to see people respond to our emails and do what we ask them to do. They're getting value out of the trial. They're finding success. But we want to make sure that they continue to be successful. And how do we do that? So really the way that I think about it is onboarding is the part of the conversation where you help people move forward and then you have to help them keep moving forward. So I don't even like to, my clients have liked hearing paid conversions and upgrades as the, as a good leading indicator, but very often that's the wrong approach to take because there's so many other challenges and so many other things going wrong that very often people will assume they hire someone, they write the emails, and then bada bing, bada boom, their conversion rates are going to go up, which is magical hockey stick growth, without realizing that this, you know, helping people get started it could take 150 tests. I think Wistia published an article that it took about 150 tests for them to really get their onboarding to a place where they knew they were not only getting the right people, but they were getting the right people for the right plans. And they were getting, it took a lot of research and a team of several people to make it. We're several years to make this happen. So we're still, when we're talking onboarding, we're talking about organizational change and transformation and how do you move forward in the right direction.
Yes, because in SaaS, unlike info products where the tension is not so high at all and you can, you know, buy something as an instant purchase, mm-hmm. in SaaS you have to have a great fit with the person's own life cycles, problems, etc. And mm-hmm. it's so much deeper than just the clicking the pay button right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, so that's another thing that another conversation that we had at MicroConf at some of the roundtables, where with info products, almost everyone there has purchased a book or a course that they and then never opened it. So there's even when you've already completed the purchase, there's still a way to not do anything about it. There's still a way to not get started. So when we're talking about, I love talking about the info products as an example because it's a great way to point out that internal work that people have. People may know that you are the right product for them, decide that they want to pay you a few hundred dollars to help you solve their problem, and then they still may choose to do nothing about it. So our goal, whether it's SaaS or info products, is to help people overcome those internal blockers, and that's where the conversion copywriting comes in and joining the conversation happening in everyone's heads, because it's very easy to just do nothing. It's much easier to do nothing than to do something.
One of the important questions I had for you, and it's a shame that I kept it to the end, but we obviously had a lot of other important questions, is that you know, we often see those pretty charts, and I saw them in your work as well, where the user journey is so wonderful and binary, and you have, yeah. you know, an entry point, and then there is, it separates in two different options, and then you send two little neat emails, but software has so many features in it, and the user journeys can be so different. How do you optimize for those different use cases and situations?
Oh, yes. Yes, I love that That's so great. I'm so glad to hear you say that, James, because that, there's one slide that I added to the MicroConf deck almost at the last minute that had a nice pretty chart, and each email or each square represented an email, and this is what you're going for. And this is still a framework of where you want to be headed, but you're absolutely right. There are so many different journeys and so many different ways that people use a tool, even within the same group or segment or job story or persona, whatever framework you're using to categorize how people use your product differently and how they buy it differently. So the way that I approach this problem, and it's kind of a work in progress, this is one of the areas where I'm continuing to learn, is to use that first email, that self-segmenter, to really help people with the to help use the self-segmenter or a recommendation engine prior to completing sign up to help make sure that you know exactly who is using your product for what goal. And by that, I mean when you do your jobs to be done style interviews. So when you talk to people and you learn what their ultimate goal is in using a product, you form their job story, you have your several different job stories, you want to design your onboarding sequences or your onboarding conversations even, because we're not quite even at to the sequence level yet, by saying, who is here for what reason and how do we help them get what they need? This is especially true if you have a product with many different, with an open-ended loop as opposed to a single feature. So let me give you an example, because that was a little bit convoluted. When people sign up for your product, they give you your email, they give you their name, and then if you just dump them into the product and let them figure it out on their own, then you're leaving it up to them to figure out how to use your tool. You don't have too much information on why they're here. So to overcome that, I like to recommend that you use a recommendation engine based on the job stories that people have when they come to your product and say, okay, give us your name, give us your email. Why are you here? Are you here because your boss is making look at different tools? Are you here because some other tool you were using lost all of your data? Are you here because you are trying to move forward or get a new skill or be able to get a promotion in your job? What are you here for? And the way that you actually come up with what those reasons are only happens by listening to customers. There's no substitute for this. Very often I see companies will build a recommendation engine based on how their features are organized as opposed to how people use their product. And these are almost always not the same thing. And people may, if you want to plan customer journeys that match the journey your different customers take, then you need to know who they are and what they want before they sign up.
You mentioned the words recommendation engine, and that sounds wonderfully in the vacuum, but what does it mean in real life? What kind of engine do you have? Hire a programmer to do that? Does your email software do that?
Yes. So most of the companies that I work with have had, if they have a recommendation engine, it's something that their product team is working on. It's either pre-existing, and then we want to talk about how we can update it and make changes. It's something that we're talking about adding. It's not something that I build. Although, you know, I have been thinking about learning to make one of these, because it's something that I feel so strongly about. But yeah, that's typically it's. There are a lot of different ways you can do it, but I will make the example of what I think it should look like based on the research that I've done in a type form. Mm-hmm. So that's a simple way that you can do it that may work for some companies, it may not be enough for others. So you answer some questions, and depending on the logic jump, it will give you to different answers. And then whatever answer that you ultimately land on can become a tag. I believe it can become a tag. So any kind of tool thing you're going to want to check on your own, because tools are changing all the time. But I believe you can turn it into a tag in your email marketing software, and then you can use adding that tag to a subscriber to trigger a particular sequence based on what people have said they want to do. And it's a lot. I will be the first to say that this kind of work is it takes a lot of planning, it takes a lot of research, it takes a lot of writing, it takes a lot of organizational buy-in. And that is one of the reasons for presenting the much more simplified square-based diagram of what onboarding looks like, because giving somebody some help, even if it's not the best, most perfect, most precise, most personalized help, if you are a solo founder or if you've spent the last month and a half worried about GDPR and now you've got a long list of things you need to get through and it's not your number one priority, there are still certain baby steps you can take to ultimately work up to where you want to have, where you're going to have the kind of onboarding that helps each individual user based on what job they hire your software to do.
So, a very, very dirty question. because it's going to disqualify all your work, is a simple linear sequence still better than nothing for a SaaS?
I'm of the opinion that yes, it is. I know that's you could do a simple linear sequence, or you could take the linear sequence I give you and then never do anything else with your onboarding again. And, mm-hmm. That's a choice you can make. But there are a simple linear sequence that is at the very least built with a little bit of research, listening to customers, where they are, even a couple of interviews, even organizing your emails in a conversion-optimized structure as opposed to, hey, here's our feature, you should try it sometime, or read our roundup post, here's a blog. Even something that small is still better than no help at all. It's still better than helping than just dumping people in and making them figure it out on their own, because it's still going to help some people, because that linear sequence is still going to be ideally written to help one major job story or segment of customers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's better than nothing.
If you were to outline the top three principles that will help our listeners better build better empathy and get into the shoes of their users and write that those emails that actually get read and become helpful, what would those three principles be?
So the first principle would be to actually talk to your users. And one of my favorite questions to ask people is, how many users have you talked to this month? And on the phone, not over email, not by responding to support chats. I mean, how many people have you sat down and talked to about what's going on in their world, not about your product, what's happening for them in the last month? And very often this number is between 0 and 2. So we want that number to be higher. And that's the first thing, is to actually do the customer interviews and actually talk to people about what's going on in their world. You learn more from 3 customer interviews than you do from a lifetime of optimizing features in a vacuum. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that when you're talking about onboarding, to really make sure that you have the right mindset, that you are looking at your customers and your prospects, your users, whatever term you're happening to use, as people with problems to solve, as people who might not really want to be doing what they're doing. You might have a tool that solves their problem, but they still might not actually want to do it. So how can you help people get started? It's a very, when you think about onboarding as helping people get started, it can break down that complexity and those big behavioral triggers into something much, much simpler. And the third thing that I recommend is to make sure that you write your emails by joining the conversation happening in your customer's head instead of talking all about your product. So you're going to show the microconf slides. There's a neat little diagram, since we're talking diagrams, that shows how you can organize an email. And you can start by saying, okay, what is the conversation happening in someone's head? What's the pain they're experiencing? And if you're going to talk to someone about you and about your product, you want to start that conversation by talking about your reader and what's going on in their world. And that alone is going to help you improve your emails and your click-through rates more than almost anything else.
Fantastic. Thank you for this gorgeous advice, Ellie. This is super helpful. Unfortunately, we have to wrap up this great conversation, but we would love to hear, where can people find your work online?
So I write about onboarding for all your favorite SaaS blogs, and I link to the articles on my site, which is allieblum.com. And I also offer a free 4-part mini course delivered by email on how to look at your user behavior data, how to look at what your customers are saying, and to take what you've learned and put it into an email.
Great. Well, we will definitely link to that in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Ellie, for your time, for the great advice. I hope it's helpful to all the founders and designers who are listening to us today. And good luck in building that further for your clients.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Ellie, and have a great day.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.